Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday the 21st of January 2025. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Patricia Lee and Margaret Simpson and recorded at home by Stephen Harness and Patricia Lee. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 7:58 a.m. and sunset is at 4:34 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events which happened on January the 21st in history. In 1549, the Act of Uniformity was passed by the English Parliament, requiring all clergy to use the Book of Common Prayer. In 1921, Agatha Christie's first novel, The Mysterious Affair at Stiles, was published, introducing the character Hercule Poirot. In 1934, Parisian baker and student of medieval life, Henri Littier, appeared in court charged with forcing his adulterous wife Juliette to wear a chastity belt. Having committed the same offence in 1932, he was sentenced to 3 months in prison and fined 50 francs for cruelty to his wife. In 1976, supersonic jet airliner Concorde made its first commercial flight. Concorde was a combined UK and French development, having been designed by British Aerospace, Rolls-Royce and Aerospatiale. Its first test flight was in 1969, and it made its last commercial flight in 2003. In 1987, the second Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees included The Coasters, Eddie Cochran, Bo Diddley, Aretha Franklin, Marvin Gaye, Bill Haley, B.B. King, Ricky Nelson, Roy Orbison, Carl Perkins, Smokey Robinson, Joe Turner, Muddy Waters and Jackie Wilson. Born on this day in 1338, Charles V the Wise, King of France during the Hundred Years' War, was born at Château de Vincennes in France. Charles initially became regent of France when his father, John II, was captured by the English at the Battle of Poitiers in 1356. He went on to regain much of the territory France had lost to the English. In 1922, Aristotelis Telly Savalas, American actor, was born in Garden City, New York. He was probably most famous for his role as the TV detective Theo Kojak from 1973 to 1978 and the James Bond arch-villain Ernst Blofeld in the film On Her Majesty's Secret Service in 1969. His other notable films include Birdman of Alcatraz, The Dirty Dozen, and Kelly's Heroes. As a singer, Savalas released a cover of the Bread song If, which became a UK number one single in 1975. In 1979, Brian O'Driscoll, Irish Rugby Union centre, was born in Dublin. O'Driscoll played 133 times for Ireland and represented the British and Irish Lions 8 times, captaining both teams during his career. He is regarded by critics as one of the greatest rugby players of all time. And deaths on this day. In 1793, Louis XVI, King of France, was executed by guillotine in Paris, following his conviction for high treason by the newly created French Parliament during the French Revolution. He was 38 years old. In 1950, George Orwell, real name Eric Arthur Blair, British author most famous for Animal Farm and 1984, died at the age of 46 due to complications of tuberculosis. In 1997, Colonel Tom Parker, most famous as the manager of Elvis Presley, died after suffering a stroke at the age of 87. Parker, born Andreas Cornelius van Kuik in the Netherlands, gained the honorary title of colonel in the Louisiana State Guard through his involvement in state politics. In 2020, Terry Jones, Welsh comedian and member of Monty Python, died from complications of dementia, aged 77. Jones, a graduate of St. Edmund Hall, Oxford University, was also a well-respected medieval historian, as well as being a prolific children's author. Now, on to the news for this week. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles.
Thames Valley Air Ambulance responded to almost 900 call-outs in Oxfordshire last year. The charity assisted thousands of people in need of urgent care across the region, responding to a total of 3,129 call-outs. This consisted of 860 in Oxfordshire, 1,081 in Buckinghamshire, and 1,123 in Berkshire. Amanda McLean, Chief Executive Officer at Thames Valley Air Ambulance, said, "These numbers bring home how much our service has grown over our 25-year history. In 2000, we were called out 149 times. Last year, we reached that total in the middle of January. February, despite being the shortest month, was also the busiest, with 282 call-outs. The charity's crews assisted 229 seriously ill or injured children throughout the year, including 91 younger than 5. The most frequent type of call-outs was for cardiac arrests, with 1,207 incidents over the year, averaging 3 per day. Ms. McLean added, "Statistics only show part of the story. These call-outs could represent people welcoming in the new year who might otherwise not have been around. Behind every number is a real person with family and friends who love them." Repeated noise from works to upgrade Oxford's rail station has damaged a local business, according to its manager. Network Rail closed the Botley Road at the rail bridge in April 2023 as part of a £161 million scheme to upgrade Oxford station. Since then, the area around the station has been covered with roadworks, and businesses and householders have had their lives disrupted. Andy Jones, manager of the Westgate and River Hotels close to the rail bridge in Botley Road, is the latest business leader to reveal the impact of the road closure and roadworks on his business in Network Hell, a booklet published to put pressure on the rail company to reopen the road. Mr. Jones said hotel guests have been repeatedly disturbed by the noise of roadworks at night. He said, "We are in the middle of a building site and the worst issue is the noise, particularly at night. If guests can't sleep, they walk out and we have to refund the guests for their stay. Because we are only a few yards away, it doesn't take much to disturb guests. A digger reversing are just groups of so-called traffic marshals hanging around chatting and playing music." Mr. Jones said his business had also suffered reputational damage, with guests leaving poor reviews online. He claimed dealing with Network Rail and its contractors Kier regarding practical problems has been a nightmare. "Even when they agreed to take action, it always takes them forever to do anything," Mr. Jones said. "Problems have included marshals chatting at night, keeping guests awake, putting up barriers outside hotel windows to dig a hole, and generators powering temporary lights being set upside the front door." Mr. Jones added, "After months of requests, we eventually managed to have the site foreman move the generator. The hotel managers described the whole project as a shambles." He said, "The latest delays have left us in an impossible position, not having the slightest idea when the work will finish and when the road will reopen. We just can't continue another year in this way. We were forced to reduce room rates and maintain occupancy for what we were told would be 2 summers. The disruption has now been constant since April 2023, with no end in sight. We cannot continue operating at a loss." Network Hell, published by West Oxford resident Julian LeVay, has called for the road to be reopened soon, for local businesses to receive compensation from the government for improved bus services and walking routes, and an independent inquiry. Network Rail has been asked to comment.
The turn of the year is a time for making resolutions. and for many people, financial goals will be firmly on the list. Just over two-fifths, 43%, of UK adults expect to set financial goals in 2025, according to new research commissioned by the Investment Association. And money resolutions come second only to health and fitness goals, with 46% also planning a health kick for 2025. Meanwhile, 36% of people are planning a resolution related to relationships and family, and the same proportion, 36%, have a travel-related goal in mind. Personal finance was found to be of similar importance to men and women, with both equally likely to be making a financial resolution in the coming new year, the findings suggest. There were differences between age groups surveyed, however. Younger people, aged 18 to 34, are three times more likely to be making a financial resolution than over 55s, with 64% in the younger age group planning to do so, compared with just 21% of over 55s overall. The younger cohort have decided to prioritise the financial goals over resolutions related to relationships and family, 58%, and adventure and travel, also 58%, the research indicates. Half, 50%, of 35 to 54-year-olds, meanwhile, have a financial goal for 2025. So, how will people actually be working towards their personal finance goals? A number of tactics proved popular. Across all of the age groups polled, boosting savings, improving budgeting, cutting back spending, reducing debt, and investing regularly were found to be among the main financial goals people had. Among those planning to invest regularly in 2025, the main goals are saving for retirement and building up a rainy day fund, according to the Opinium research survey of 2,000 people across the UK. Miranda Seath, Director for Market Insight at the Investment Association, says, "It is great to see so many people prioritising their financial goals in the new year, especially younger people. With the cost of living continuing to impact many households, building financial resilience is clearly a priority, with the majority looking to boost their savings and focus on better budgeting. As ever, consistency is key here. Even if you can't afford to put large sums of money into your savings pot each month, it will add up over time." Seath continues, "For those who can look towards the longer term, it is positive to see a significant number of people planning to invest on a regular basis. Younger investors are the most likely of any age group to want to set a financial goal in 2025. With long-term investment horizons, they have the most to gain from investing and the benefits of compound interest. As with most goals, getting into the habit of investing just £50 a month can deliver results over the long term. Always do your research and carefully consider what you can afford before making any decisions around investing."
There could be a resurgence in the popularity of cow's milk as a result of Oxford University study, it has been claimed. The study examined the role of diet in the development of colorectal cancer and revealed that an additional 300 milligrams of calcium from a food source, equivalent to a glass of milk, can reduce people's risk of developing bowel cancer by 17%. Bowel cancer is the fourth most common cancer in the UK, with an average of 44,000 cases per year, and rates are rising, particularly among younger people. Cow's milk has seen a decline in popularity in recent years, with plant-based alternatives becoming more common. According to the Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board, milk consumption has fallen by 19% since 2015. However, studies like Oxford could help cow's milk to regain popularity by highlighting its health benefits. Nick Drew, trends expert at the online discount platform WeThrift, believes. Arla, one of the UK's largest dairy producers, recently announced plans to add the feed additive Boever to cow diets to reduce methane emissions. This move led to some protests, which Mr. Drew said shows how public sentiment can remain indifferent even when faced with potential benefits. Banbury-based band Neon Knights are set to release a new single later this month. The group, consisting of Dan Bonus, Liam Morgan, Tom Stilgo and Steve Parrish, will release Bring Me Home on January 17th. Neon Knights released their debut album 33 in August, before which they released three singles from the album A Drop For Your Soul, Stoned and When You Come Around. Bringing Me Home will be the band's fourth and final single released from the album. The band, which formed in the summer of 2022, not only write their own music, but also record, mix and produce their records at Get Loud Studios in Daventry, Northamptonshire, Mr. Stilgo's home recording studio. The band also handle their own photography, website design and music video production. They will compete against five other unsigned UK bands for the chance to perform at this year's Glastonbury Festival. The band have several live shows planned for 2025.
Recalling harsh winters with snow reminded Emma Brennan of the comforting food her family would eat to help beat the chill, especially hot puddings. She says, as a nation increasingly urged to choose low-sugar, low-carb food options, some of the old favourites may not be considered healthy these days, but I still don't think you can beat a big bowl of steamed syrup pudding, cooked the traditional way in a pan of boiling water on the stove, served with custard or cream. There is no better way to warm the cockles of your heart than with a good old stodgy British pud. Desserts have become more fine dining in recent years, but it's heartening to see new cookery books reviving some of the classics. I think we can learn a lot by revisiting nostalgic staples such as Spotted Dick, Apple Crumble, or, heaven forbid due to the suet content, Jam Roly-Poly. I didn't really have a sweet tooth as a child, but I did look forward to my Sunday pudding. Occasionally my dad would get involved and make a rice pudding. In stark contrast to the rather sloppy varieties available in tins, you needed a knife to cut Dad's rice pudding, and that suited me just fine. It was the way his mother had made it too, with a good sprinkling of nutmeg on top. When my mum was a child in the 1940s, she recalls there was very little sweet stuff available to make desserts with. She said, when apples were in season, we would have apple pie made using fruit from the neighbours' trees, and that was a great treat. My dad's favourite was simply stewed apple with custard, no pastry. My partner's father was apparently partial to an apple with the core removed, then stuffed with sultanas and baked in the oven. Simple, but warming and tasty. Apple pie was still a favourite for my generation. I remember being invited to a friend's house for tea, and we were served homemade apple pie. When we returned home, Mum asked if we'd enjoyed it, but my sister wasn't too happy that the friend had put the apple stalks in the pie. They were actually cloves, not stalks, but it was something we always laughed about whenever an apple pie was on the menu. The winter months were the only time when I envied the children who had school dinners. We always took a packed lunch, not for the mince, mash and veg first course, but for desserts such as chocolate crunch with exotic looking pink custard. I have to confess that when convenience packet desserts became popular in the 1970s, I was temporarily tempted away from traditional foods. Going to a friend's house and being given peach-flavoured Angel Delight for the first time was an eye-opener. I started to request such culinary atrocities as instant whip and dream topping, essentially a pouch of powdery stuff you added milk to and whisked. Hundreds and thousands sprinkled on top finished off the sugar overload. Dad couldn't understand why we craved that old muck, as he called it, when the alternative was a homemade steamed pudding. Now I totally agree with him and have been enjoying making some old favourites with a marginally healthy twist, including a lightly spiced pear and apple crumble served with thick yoghurt instead of cream, and a bread and butter pudding with a few fresh blueberries instead of raisins. I now know for sure that instant whip would be a poor substitute on a cold winter's day.
A judge has expressed his concerns about two defendants who have occupied the court system since migrating to the UK. Recorder John Hardy spoke about his concerns during the sentences of two men who recently moved to London from the Middle East. Malik Evans, 24, and Osama Kanoui, 29, both appeared at Oxford Crown Court on January 9th, charged with theft. The pair both admitted to stealing £1,400 of clothing from a Burberry store in Bicester Village on September the 9th, 2024. However, the sentencing was adjourned for a pre-sentence report to be prepared. While advising defence counsel that the sentencing guidelines may not be considered in isolation, Recorder Hardy said, "I've read about their antecedents, and it will appear that both of them have arrived relatively recently in this country. I may be wrong about that. Others come with less magnanimous intentions, and these defendants each set off on a crime spree over the course of the last 12 to 18 months and occupy the court system. Evans of West End London and Kanoui of Brucegrove London are due back in court on March the 4th. Major work is expected to start soon to create a new improved A34 junction which will help to remove traffic from Abingdon town centre. Oxfordshire County Council and its contractors Balfour Beatty started work this summer to create major improvements for drivers in the area. The junction at Lodge Hill only has north-facing slip roads, but the scheme will add new south-facing slip roads as well as making cycling and walking easier in the area. Adding the south-facing slip roads will remove traffic from the town centre, as some drivers will no longer have to travel through it to access the 34 southbound at the Marcham interchange. Officials said it should reduce the amount of traffic on Stratton Way, Ox Street, Marcham Road and other routes. The County Council says the new junction will enable more than 1,000 new homes in Abingdon by 2031 and support and enable economic growth in the wider Sinesvale area, increasing opportunities for local people. In September, archaeologists completed digs at the site before major construction work could get started. Abingdon North County Councillor Nathan Lee said the project was more than just preparing for a new interchange. It gives us a glimpse into the hidden layers of our land's history. With 16 trial trenches, 12 test pits and 2 bell holes, the evaluation aimed to explore any potential archaeological remains and better understand the ancient geological formations that lay beneath the surface. The County Council says the construction enabling works are due to begin in early 2025, with the main construction programme starting in the spring. Construction is expected to be completed in the summer of 2026. As part of the project, contractors have been installing traffic calming measures on the local network. This includes a new zebra crossing on the junctions between St Swithin's Road and the Avenue in Kennington. Carl Champness, project manager for Oxford Archaeology, last year welcomed discoveries made on site. He said in September, "The discovery of a rare low middle age hand axe and the interglacial channel deposits at Lodge Hill dating between 600 and 500,000 years ago may provide new insights into a lost landscape. This is only the start of the story, and we hope planned further investigation and detailed analysis of these remains will help enhance our understanding of the early occupation of Britain. Abingdon South County Councillor Neil Fawcett said the discoveries were significant, but were not expected to delay the delivery of the new interchange, which has been discussed for decades.
The county's Wildlife Trust has hailed a year of success stories for its work in the natural world. The Berkshire, Buckinghamshire and Oxfordshire Wildlife Trust said its nature reserves provided shelter for numerous species, despite changing weather patterns and extreme rain. The Trust said 2024 was a difficult year for native wildlife, with invertebrates, including butterflies, suffering from poor spring weather and ongoing issues such as atmospheric pollution and agricultural pesticides likely added to the challenges. However, it also said its 2024 reserve surveying program revealed many encouraging local wildlife successes. One of the highlights of the year was the discovery of a new species of fungus at Rushbeds Wood in Buckinghamshire. Despite the frequent storms and resulting flooding, the Trust's ecology team observed some positive bird sightings. Colin Williams, the Trust's senior ecologist, described his most productive bird transect survey in 16 years at Gallows Bridge Farm on the Oxfordshire border when the site was flooded following Storm Bert. He said, with large areas of flood water, the site was in perfect condition for wintering waders and wildfowl. I watched a very active peregrine falcon harassing a mixed flock of 1,500 lapwing and 800 golden plover. As I continued on my way, numerous snipe were flushed from the wet grassland meadows. From the shelter of a dense hedgerow, I was able to count a vast raft of wildfowl loafing in the flooded meadow. 800 widgeon, 22 shoveler, 48 teal and 12 pintail. The Wildlife Trust's reserves also played host to several scarce migrant birds, including a dark morph booted eagle at Warburg Nature Reserve in Oxfordshire on October the 31st. A survey to establish the bat species inhabiting Moor Copse in Berkshire found 12 different species, as well as 8 species of small mammal. There were also several noteworthy bird sightings, including 2 pairs of barn owls, Dartford warblers and nightingales.
More than £8,000 was raised for Cancer Research UK by ODS in 2024. The Oxford City Council-owned company selected the organisation as its Charity of the Year and engaged in a year-long campaign to generate the funds. ODS took part in several events through the year, including the Race for Life and the Chiltern 50, where employees walked, jogged, hiked and ran to contribute to the cause. Other fundraising activities include bake sales, a tombola and interactive games such as Guess the Teddy's Name, a footballer sweepstake and guess the sweet number. Staff members also baked goods, donated items for the tombola and made additional personal contributions. Councillor Nigel Chapman, Cabinet Member for Citizen Focused Services and Council Companies, said, "Well done ODF for once again showing their commitment to doing good in Oxford. The staff's enthusiasm and dedication have been invaluable in helping raise vital funds for cancer research. It's partnerships like this that make a real difference. I want to thank ODS staff for their commitment to raising such a significant amount of Cancer Research UK." Maria Warner, Social Value Lead at ODS, added, "I'm incredibly proud of the effort from Team ODS. It has been a privilege to work with Cancer Research UK and Josie from their Oxford branch over the past year to raise vital funds for life-saving research. Personally, I've enjoyed participating in events like Race for Life and Chiltern 50 alongside some fantastic colleagues who have all pulled together for this fantastic cause. Cancer impacts so many lives and it was important for us that we could contribute to the important work cancer research does. ODS also installed textile collection blanks at its Cowley Marsh and Horsebath depots, which raised a further £1,000 through stock donations. The money raised by ODS will directly benefit cancer research in the Oxford area, with contributions earmarked for the CRUK Oxford Centre. Josie Coakley, Cancer Research UK Relationship Manager, said, "On behalf of Cancer Research UK, I'd like to thank everyone at ODS for their fundraising over the past year. From taking part in the Race for Life to baking cakes, the entire ODS team have got involved and raised over £8,000 for life-saving cancer research in Oxfordshire. This amount of money could fund a lab technician for 4 months. Lab technicians are crucial to running of the lab, ensuring researchers are equipped with everything they need to beat cancer. Additionally, ODS staff have donated over 50 bags of pre-loved clothes and household items, which will be sold in our shops to raise even more funds for cancer research."
An independent late-night sober social space is opening in Oxford this month. The Coffee Guild, TCG, will open on Walton Street at the end of January, as renovations are made to the former Daisy store. Comprised of four best friends, the team includes 29-year-old Jack Timpson, 33-year-old Keel Churcher, and 31-year-old Carl Powell from Oxford, as well as 35-year-old Anthony Padgett from Wales. TCG was started because we wanted to create a late-night social space that had a cosy, warm, and inviting atmosphere that wasn't a pub, club, or bar, said Keel. We wanted a sober space where people can study, work, or socialise late into the night without having the distractions of home or having to go to a library. We've seen a huge culture shift in Oxford in the past 10 years, where more and more people need a space later into the night that serves good coffee, good food, and a selection of bites. Most coffee shops or cafes close around 5, so we took inspiration from European cafes that stay open later into the night. TCG's motto is "Our Place, Your Space," which reflects their motives in bringing a late-night alcohol-free space to Oxford. We believe in creating a space that is alcohol-free, as we all know people who suffer with being around alcohol. A safe space where you can socialise, be around people, and come to events where there isn't any pressure to drink. To have fun is what we are creating. Coffee, food, and events are planned for the new business, which also features a unique decor and vibe. We've partnered with Modern Standard Coffee Roasters for a blend of coffee you won't be able to get anywhere else, added Keel. Our food we'd describe as comfort food, such as toasties, soups, cakes and pastries freshly cooked in our kitchen and ready to enjoy. Nordic-style cafes and colour schemes have been an inspiration, as we're using terracotta, light greys, blues, and warm lighting alongside a rustic finish with exposed bricks and wooden finishes. We wanted to create the vibe and atmosphere of walking into your front room and being the place that you want to bring family, cozy up with a book, or just enjoy a good natter with us. An opening date of Friday, January the 31st has been penciled in by the team, with the quartet anxious to get started. The feeling of nervousness and excitement, combined with stress and lack of sleep the past few months, has been sometimes a bit too much for us, said Keel. We're finally seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and we're so excited to swing open that door and welcome people to what we all collectively dreamed of.
Matt Phillips admits he has found his time at Oxford United difficult, particularly due to an earlier lengthy injury layoff. The 30-year-old winger arrived as a free agent at the start of August with a sense of expectation following 8 years at West Bromwich Albion. Phillips featured 4 times for the United at the start of the season, but was forced off during the 3-1 win at home against Preston North End on August 31st. He made his return as a substitute when the Ewes were beaten 6-2 at home against Middlesbrough on November 23rd, and now featured 14 times in all competitions for United, Phillips said, "If I'm honest, I've found it difficult, especially coming back from my recent injury. I haven't played a lot of football in the last year or so. I'm working on it, I'm getting my fitness back and confidence in my body again. I've got some more minutes for myself and I'll keep working hard." Phillips opened the scoring as the Ewes ultimately suffered an Emirates FA Cup third round exit at Exeter City, rounding off a sweeping counter-attack. "Lads are coming back from injury, but there's no excuses not to win the game. Hopefully these minutes in the tank will stand the lads in good stead moving forward, because we're going to need everyone," said Phillips. "The boys that have been playing have been 100%, and some of them have been given a rest, and it was an opportunity for the lads coming back from injury that haven't really been involved much to go and get some minutes." Gary Rowlett believes Chelsea loanee Alex Matos will provide different qualities to the Oxford United midfield. Matos became United's second signing of the January transfer window when he arrived from the Blues on Friday afternoon. Although a holding midfielder, Matos has the ability to play further up and made his debut from the bench as the Ewes were knocked out from the Emirates FA Cup third round at Exeter City. United head coach Rowlett said, "I thought we were lacked a little bit of energy in there at times, and I think Alex gives you that. He certainly got across and made some tackles. He moves well, he steps up and intercepts the game. I think he's the type of player that brings a slightly different dimension to our midfield. I was pleased with him. He can do different roles. He can sit and be energetic defensively and go and break up the game and give you that pivot to maybe bounce rather than be a playmaker in there. But I think he can also play a little higher up as one of the eights maybe, and go and get a little bit closer to people. I think it gives us something different to what we have currently in the squad." Gary Rowlett is unsure whether Oxford United will appeal the red card shown to Tyler Goodrum in the Emirates FA Cup third round defeat at Exeter City. Goodrum was shown a straight red card with 9 minutes to go at St James Park, after he lashed out with his arm at Jake Richards when the Grecian's midfielder pulled on Goodrum's shirt. The sending off came with United's already 3-1 down, but ultimately ended in any fading hope of a Ewes fight back. More importantly, it meant Goodrum is set to face a 3-game ban in Sky Bet Championship, potentially ruling him out against Plymouth Argyle, Blackburn Rovers and Luton Town. United head coach Rowett said, "I've seen it a number of times. The lads pulled Tyler and sustained that pull for 3 or 4 seconds. Tyler has swung his left arm to try and free himself. I think by the letter of the law, the fact he connects with the player's face, I can understand why the referee has given him a red card. I think it was borderline. I think the reaction probably from their bench didn't really help. But I understand it, and they're protecting their own player. I don't want to take anything away from their performance. I'm disappointed to lose Tyler. He's not a malicious player. I don't think it was a malicious act. He hasn't swung an elbow, but the fact he's put his arm back and caught him in the face, and I can understand it." Asked whether the Ewes might appeal the send-off, Rowett responded, "I don't know. I asked the referee afterwards, but he seemed pretty sure. I'm pretty sure his report isn't going to give us a lot of leeway, judging by the way that he spoke afterwards. I'd have to look at it again closely. He shouldn't have done it. If you throw your arm back and it does catch the player in the face, then it is deemed as reckless. I don't think Tyler is a malicious player, and I don't think there's an awful lot of force in it, but I do understand."
Young singers from across Oxfordshire got to experience being part of Christchurch Cathedral Choir. Christchurch Cathedral School hosted its annual Chorister for a Day event on Saturday, allowing children to get a taste of what it would be like to be a chorister at the school. The afternoon was spent with current pupils and the director of cathedral music, Peter Holder. Mr. Holder joined Christchurch last year from Westminster Abbey, and before that had been at St. Paul's Cathedral. As an organist, he played at the funeral of Queen Elizabeth and the coronation of King Charles and Queen Camilla. He was joined on Saturday by the school's head of music, Sophie Biddle, to guide the children through the experience of taking part in an evensong in the cathedral. One mother, who had brought her son from Milton Keynes for the day, said her son had such a wonderful time, he'd join the choir tomorrow if he could.
Blenheim Palace is looking to set a benchmark for sustainable tourism and conservation in 2025. The site near Woodstock is striving to become a top destination for eco-conscious travellers while preserving its heritage and ensuring sustainable future for the estate, it said. The palace has introduced a range of initiatives centred around conservation, preservation and restoration. These include waste reduction, renewable energy promotion and biodiversity enhancement. Visitors are encouraged to travel green with incentives for those arriving by train, bus, bicycle or electric vehicle. Currently, one in five visitors to travel to Blenheim Palace via green means. Blenheim Palace aims to achieve carbon neutrality by 2027. A 6.5-hectare solar park has already been implemented, powering the equivalent of 721 homes and avoiding 15,000 tonnes of CO2 emissions over 15 years. More than 200 acres of natural habitats have been restored, with 50 acres of pollinator-rich meadows created in partnership with Rouse Honey. This promotes biodiversity, supports wildlife and enhances carbon sequestration, the palace said. The palace has phased out single-use cups, preventing more than 100,000 cups from going to landfills annually. Visitors can contribute to sustainability by buying a tree when booking their visit, with more than 5,000 trees planted in the past year alone. In 2025, the UNESCO World Heritage Site is set to celebrate its 75th anniversary of opening to the public. It will also embark on its most ambitious restoration project in its history, the full repair of large sections of the palace roof. This two-year initiative will reuse existing materials, incorporate recycled insulation, and capture rainwater for reuse. Blenheim's gardens are also set to undergo a transformation with new features to be explored every season. Dominic Hare, chief executive at Blenheim Palace, said, "Sustainability is at the heart of everything we do at Blenheim Palace. From the restoration of our historic roof to the development of pollinator-friendly meadows, every initiative reflects our commitment to future generations. We're proud to lead by example and inspire visitors to become part of this journey too." Blenheim Palace's sustainability work earned it the title of Sustainable Tourism Provider of the Year at the UK Inbound Awards for Excellence in 2024. Additionally, the attraction was recently named one of the UK's top 100 employers on the list of Best Large Companies to Work For 2024, achieving one of its major 10-year goals 3 years ahead of schedule.
Four cats were found discarded in bins in Oxfordshire in less than a week, according to an animal charity. The fourth cat, Bridget, was handed into the Heart Veterinary Centre in Bicester on Sunday morning. Oxfordshire Animal Sanctuary said she was the fourth cat in less than 7 days who has come into its care after being found in a bin. The charity said the 8 to 12 week old cat has already been let down by humans and discarded as if her life means nothing. The Heart Veterinary Centre was unable to disclose where the bin was located due to data protection policies. A statement posted by the sanctuary on social media said, "There are zero excuses for anyone to do this. Thankfully, she was found by a kind member of the public who took her to Heart Vets to ensure she was safe. We can't even bring ourselves to think what would have happened if she hadn't been found. We urge anyone reading this who may be struggling to contact Rescues for Help rather than dumping their animals. Yes, we are all full, but we'll add you to our waiting list and help you as soon as possible. Oxfordshire Animal Sanctuary, which admits and rehomes around 500 animals every year, said Bridget is not up for adoption currently. Those who wish to donate to the charity can do so at oxfordshireanimalsanctuary.org.uk.
The story of how radio changed British life during its early days is set to be told in a new book. Listen in, How Radio Changed the Home, written by B.T. Rubens from Oxford, is set to be published on February the 6th by Bodleian Library Publishing. Told from the listener's perspective, the book offers an insight into the early history of radio, focusing on the impact it had on domestic life in Britain. In 1922, just 150,000 people tuned into radio broadcasts, but in 1939 that number had soared to 34 million. The book will show what the arrival of radio meant to people by sharing their experiences as they adopted the then radical form of communication technology. For some, radio was a welcome intellectual escape, as one listener wrote to the Radio Times in 1929, calling it a godsend to women bursting with mental energy, yet who must stay close to a workaday household duties. While to others it was a source of companionship and education. Ms. Rubens was a BBC radio producer for 35 years and is now a freelance producer, presenter and writer. Her research, including her discovery of unpublished personal testimonies in the Bodleian Library archives, gives new insight into radio's early days. A flying trapeze school has applied to use an Oxford park as its permanent base. James Long of High Fly Trapeze has submitted a planning application to Oxford City Council for two flying trapeze rigs and a multi-purpose echo hub. The flying trapeze school has been using Florence Park for the last six summers, but now they want to use it to operate all year round. The eco hub would be used as the school's office. In the application covering letter, Mr. Long said, "Our school offers unique opportunities for individuals of all ages to engage in an exciting and dynamic activity that promotes health, fitness and personal growth. The flying trapeze has inspired many in our community to push their boundaries, build confidence and enjoy an active lifestyle. Allowing us to continue and expand this work will further enrich the cultural and recreation offerings of the area."
Thames Valley's police chief has been suspended from his role with immediate effect and is facing a gross misconduct investigation. Matthew Barber, the police and crime commissioner for Thames Valley, announced Chief Constable Jason Hogg had been suspended in a shock announcement yesterday afternoon, the 16th. He said, "This afternoon I have taken the decision to suspend Jason Hogg from his role as Chief Constable of Thames Valley Police, with immediate effect." This follows a meeting earlier today with the Independent Office of Police Conduct, the IOPC, in which they informed me that as part of an ongoing investigation that they are conducting, they have assessed that allegations against the Chief Constable would, if proven, amount to gross misconduct. I emphasise that the decision to suspend is a neutral act. It has no bearing on any indication of guilt and should not be seen as such. The allegations are that he failed to adequately investigate allegations relating to the improper retention of sensitive police information. Mr. Barber said he would be making an appointment by the end of the month with Deputy Chief Constable Ben Snuggs, fulfilling those duties in the meantime. IOPC Director of Operations, Steve Noonan, said, "We can confirm that we are investigating the conduct of the Chief Constable of Thames Valley Police, Jason Hogg, as part of an ongoing independent investigation. The investigation relates to concerns that, between 2016 and 2020, he and another senior TVP officer failed to properly investigate allegations that a former senior TVP officer retained a significant amount of sensitive police information after they left the force. As part of our independent investigation, which started in April 2023, the Chief Constable will be served with a notice of investigation for potential gross misconduct relating to alleged breaches of the police standards of professional behaviour regarding honesty and integrity and duties and responsibilities. A second senior TVP officer is under investigation for potential misconduct, the IOPC said. Mr. Noonan added, "This does not mean that disciplinary proceedings will necessarily follow. At the end of our investigation, we will decide whether any officers should face disciplinary proceedings. No criminal offences have been identified as part of this investigation." A separate investigation into the former senior TVP officer's retention of sensitive information has concluded, and a file of evidence was recently provided to the Crown Prosecution Service in December to consider potential criminal offences under the Data Protection Act and misconduct in public office. That investigation was carried out by Surrey Police under our direction and control. Taking on the Chief Constable role in April 2023, Mr. Hogg said rebuilding trust was the number one issue for policing nationally. It followed a series of scandals largely involving London's Metropolitan Police, including the rape and murder of Sarah Everard by serving PC Wayne Cousins in 2021.
The latest step in a major housing development to the north of the city has been reached. Plans for 8 new pieces of art have been approved by Oxford City Council ahead of the first phase of the Oxford North development opening the second quarter of this year. The project aims to deliver 1 million square feet of new labs and workspace and 480 new homes surrounded by public parks and amenities within a 15-minute cycle ride from the city centre. Around 4,500 people will work at the site alongside 1,500 residents who will enjoy amenities including a hotel, nursery, shops, bars and cafes, and 3 public parks. The artwork will resemble 8 planets: Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus and Neptune. It will be installed at Falaise Park. The developer says they relate to the Oxford North's aim of creating an innovative interdisciplinary environment that combines life, work and education. In the application's decision notice, it said, "The council considers that the proposal accords with the policies of the development plan as summarised below. It is taken into consideration all other material matters, including matters raised in response to the consultation and publicity. Any material harm that the development would otherwise give rise to can be offset by the conditions imposed." The 5-storey Red Hall will provide 4,000 square foot of office space for a range of science and innovation startups and SMEs. The ground floor will have a cafe, bar, event, meeting and community space, co-working spaces and retail units. The development is being built by Thomas White Oxford, the development company of St John's College. The central landscape was designed by landscape architecture practice Gustafson Porter and Bowman, which previously worked on Chelsea Barracks and the Princess Diana Memorial Fountain in London. The striking Red Hall can be seen taking shape from the A34 near Pear Tree Interchange. The first 317 new homes of the development began construction in November 2023. David Camp, Chief Executive Officer at Stanhope, said, "We're delivering new labs and workspaces surrounded by public parks, amenities and public art for people living and working and visiting here, which will open in Q2 2025. We are talking to a number of exciting companies, from startups to SMEs to larger corporates, about joining us, and they need space to grow, rooted in Oxford. There was a tragedy at the development in December 2023 when construction worker Ampreet Bhatti, a father of two, died at the site. Mr. Bhatti was from Bilston, a town in Wolverhampton in the West Midlands.
An Oxfordshire charity has received a visit from Sir Ed Davy as it marks 30 years of supporting young carers across the county. Be Free Young Carers is the only charity in the region that supports children and young people in Oxfordshire, whom others rely upon to function. The charity operates across the southern and central parts of the county and plans to expand its services this year. These services include organising day trips, befriending, counselling, providing emotional support and youth group activities. As part of its 30th birthday celebrations, its team met with Sir Ed Davy, leader of the Liberal Democrats in Didcot. He learnt about the charity's current operation and met some of the 500 young carers it works with each year, as well as support workers and volunteers. Sir Ed has personal experience of being a young carer, having looked after his mum when she was diagnosed with cancer. He cared for her for 5 years from the age of 9, and now cares for his severely disabled son alongside his wife. Sabien North, CEO of Be Free Young Carers, said, "Being a young carer is a 24/7 role. It's the ultimate responsibility at a time where most people have the freedom to take opportunities such as making friends, developing key life skills, and enjoying days out for granted. In almost all cases, young carers have no choice but to adopt their role as an important stage of their life, and can, understandably, feel isolated both emotionally and practically through lack of support, knowledge, or respite. That's where Be Free Young Carers plays such an important role, and we're proud to have worked with young carers in Oxfordshire for 30 extraordinary years. We believe all children should have the chance to be children by living in a fun, engaging, and supportive environment, away from the pressures of their important caring roles. Our work has helped thousands of young carers reach their true potential by enhancing resources available, and we thank every person who has been part of our historic journey to date. The celebrations come after research revealed 2 in 3 young carers aged 8 to 17 suffer from stress. More than half have sleep problems, and more than a third are frustrated by their role. With the help of youth workers, fundraisers, and volunteers, the charity provided more than 600 trip spaces for young carers over 42 activities last year. The team also delivered 174 one-to-one emotional support sessions, matched 11 young carers with befrienders, and conducted 36 mindfulness movement sessions.
A school in Woodstock will be given a £4.5 million grant to expand its teaching facilities due to an increased demand for pupil places in the area. The plans for the Marlborough School, a Church of England secondary academy school, include the construction of a new teaching block, as well as creating additional changing room facilities, toilets, small self-contained accommodation, additional hard play areas, and more car parking spaces. The number of pupils admitted to the school each year is set to increase from 180 to 210 in September 2026. Oxfordshire County Council approved the funding to be granted to the River Learning Trust, the multi-academy trust which manages the school, at a County Council Cabinet Member for Finance held on Friday, January the 20th. Planning permission was granted for the development in November 2024, by West Oxfordshire District Council. According to the executive summary of the decision, local housing growth and rising primary school numbers have created a pupil place pressure for secondary schools in Woodstock. The project will be part funded by increased Section 106 development contributions of £3.895 million, which have already been secured. The council will request the use of a funding pot from the government called the Basic Need Contingency to cover the shortfall. The expansion is awaiting approval from the Regional Schools Director. The works are expected to be completed by summer 2026.
Oxfordshire County Council has revealed that in the last financial year alone, it spent more than £3 million repairing potholes, though a city mechanic said damage to some roads was still life-threatening. As the county marked National Pothole Day on the 16th, the council said it has to take a prudent view in the way it maintains its highway. We need to balance the costly repair of roads that are already in the poorest condition with more cost-effective resurfacing schemes on roads that are about to fall into disrepair to prevent more costly repairs at a later date, a spokesman said. Our highways teams respond to reports from the public as well as carrying out their own inspections on our 3,000-mile road network. In the financial year 2023-24, 17,119 potholes were reported and the council repaired 37,606. It said that as well as repairing potholes, it actively tries to prevent them from occurring through programmes of resurfacing work, such as the £7 million highway maintenance programme which began last spring. The council said a similar programme is planned around the county this year. Zach Iqbal, owner of Spannerworks Garage and Repair Shop in Ferry Hinksey Road, Oxford, said potholes were a serious hazard for motorists. He said some of the worst potholes are in North Hinksey Lane. They are very dangerous for cars, but for motorbikes they can be life-threatening. Potholes are also very bad for the environment because drivers have to slow down to avoid them and then speed back up again, which uses more fuel. The council needs to be quicker to reacting to dangerous potholes to fill them in. It impacts everyone. They can cause tire and suspension damage, and on new cars they can damage the rims of the wheels, which cost around £1,000 to repair. This week, roads campaigner Mark Morrill, known as Mr. Pothole, announced he is quitting his campaign after more than a decade of raising awareness of poor surfaces in Oxfordshire and the surrounding counties. Speaking to Good Morning Britain, he said, "I've lost faith in any government or political party wanting to do something. It comes as people across the county have been complaining about potholes."
Despite Oxfordshire County Council recently moving its residence parking permit system online, people who cannot set up a digital account will still have access to paper visiting parking permits. The council made the switch to an online system in a bid to make it easier and more convenient for users to manage their accounts. However, to help those who cannot access the internet, paper scratch card visitor permits will still be available. Councillor Andrew Gant, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said, "Many types of permits which used to be issued in paper form have gone digital in recent years, including tax discs and residence parking permits. Despite initial concerns, these work well and are safer, more reliable and more efficient for both users and authorities. The reasons for moving to digital visitor permits are right and the system is working well. However, we have listened to the feedback as part of our customer experience strategy aimed at designing services around our residents, and we are continued to make our paper visits permits available to people who have no other option," These will be assessed on a case-by-case basis. Currently, paper visitor permits will remain valid until the end of 2025. From Memory Lane. Employees at Moreland Brewery at Abingdon received a gold watch after completing 40 years with the company and a silver watch after 20 years. A social evening was held at the Abbey Hall in 1985 to honour three long-serving staff. Albert Woodruff, the company's surveyor, had completed 40 years, and carpenter Alan Perris and bottling maintenance fitter Mick Gehring had both worked there for 20 years. The presentations were made by company chairman Sir Humphrey Prideaux. More than 130 employees and their spouses attending the evening, which included a buffet supper and entertainment.
Hundreds of thousands of people aged 50 and 52 are set to receive a bile cancer testing kit in the post from the NHS over the coming months. It comes after researchers from the University of Oxford find a glass of milk a day can cut the risk of bile cancer by almost a fifth. They said the research is the strongest evidence yet that calcium protects against the disease. The team also discovered having the equivalent of a glass of wine every day increases the risk of bile cancer by 15%. The NHS is extending its screening programme across England, meaning around 850,000 more people will now be included. Those aged 50 or 52 will receive their kits by the end of March, while people aged 51 or 53 will need to wait until their next birthday. This means everyone in England aged 50 to 74 will eventually be offered a home screening test to help detect bowel cancer. The test checks for blood and a stool sample, with people collecting their own sample at home before posting it back to NHS labs in a prepaid return envelope. Results are then sent out, along with any information about further tests if required. The NHS is urging people to take up the test after figures showed fewer than 60% of 54 to 57-year-olds do so, compared with more than 70% of those aged 60 to 74. Steve Russell, National Director for Vaccinations and Screening at NHS England, said, "Lives are saved when cancers are caught early, and the expansion of the NHS bowel cancer screening programme to those aged 50 will help to spot signs of bowel cancer sooner and potentially save thousands of lives. We are seeing positive uptake of the home testing kits, with over two-thirds of those eligible returning their tests, but this drops off in the lower age groups, and we want to see even more people taking up the offer. While taking a test for bile cancer may be the last thing you're thinking about as you enter the new year, it could save your life. So if you've got a kit hiding in a drawer at home, I would encourage you to return it as quickly as you can. While the bile cancer screening programme will cover those aged 50 to 74, anyone aged 75 or older can request a kit by phoning the NHS Bile Cancer Screening Helpline on 0800 707 6060. Anyone with symptoms of bile cancer is urged to contact their GP and not wait for a test.
A sentencing has been scheduled for a man who told a police officer he hoped she would get raped. David Caron of Fane Drive, Beresfield, appeared at Oxford Magistrates Court, charged with six counts. The 31-year-old was charged with one count using threatening behaviour to cause harassment or alarm, one count of racially aggravated harassment, two counts of assault by beating of an emergency worker, one count of sending by public communication and offensive of menacing message and one count of making threats to kill. On June 22nd last year, he beat two police officers in Beaconsfield. A few days later, on June 30th, he made a grossly offensive 99 call. On the same day, in Abingdon, he told a police constable, "I'm going to find out where you live. I'm going to kill you, burn your house down and kill your wife." On November the 9th, at Abingdon Police Station, Karen was racially offensive towards an officer. The last count took place on the same day when he told a detention officer, "I hope you get raped." Karen was convicted of the offences in December last year. He is next due to appear at the same lower court on January 20th for a sentencing hearing at 10 a.m. A Cotswolds town has been named one of the best places to live in the UK, but Oxfordshire itself has been snubbed. According to data collected by the Sunday Times, Cirencester in Gloucestershire was ranked as one of the most popular locations to reside in, but places which had previously featured on national rankings such as Oxford and Henley have been left out this time. East Oxford was included on the Sunday Times Best Places to Live in 2023, receiving glowing marks for its renowned museums, excellent theatres and ravishing urban landscape. Both Oxford and Henley also made the Telegraph's list of the 50 most desirable places to live in the UK in the summer of 2023. As part of the new rankings compiled by the Sunday Times, data from 9 categories for every local authority was combined, including crime rates, Ofsted reports, NHS waiting times, average house prices, and the number of green flag parks in the area. The article read, "If you want an authentic Cotswold life, markets, shops, parks, cafes, and a smattering of culture to elevate it above the weekender four-wheel drive norm, along with pretty houses, barbers, and dogs, then cut home in Cirencester." The average property price in Cirencester is £505,500, and the Sunday Times also outlined the best places within Cirencester to live. Jonathan Bailey has been nominated for a prestigious award for his role in box office hit Wicked. The actor, who was born in Wallingford and grew up in Benson, scored a Screen Actors Guild nomination in the Best Supporting Actor category for his role as Prince Fiero in the musical spin-off film Wicked, which tells the origin story of the Wizard of Oz's Wicked Witch of the West and is based on the West End musical of the same name, picked up 5 award nominations in total. Mr. Bailey's fellow cast members also received nods, with Cynthia Erivo up for Best Actress for her role as Elphaba and Ariana Grande for the Best Supporting Actress as Glinda. The film was shortlisted for 2 further award categories for the top prize of Best Cast and Best Stunt Ensemble. As Wicked lead the way, the SAG Awards are thought to be a good indication for who might win an Academy Award, with the Oscar nominations to be announced next week. On Sunday, the film was awarded the Cinematic and Box Office Achievement Prize at the Golden Globe Awards in Hollywood, though the cast missed out on the Acting Awards. The winners of the 13 awards across the film and television will be revealed in a ceremony hosted by Kristen Bell on February 23rd.
The West End of Oxford is set to be transformed into an exciting development of flats, offices, student accommodation and leisure venues, with a master plan for Oxpens. Oxwed, the joint venture between Nuffield College and Oxford City Council, has put forward a planning application for the regeneration of the Oxpens site, with the proposals lined up for approval. The proposals for the Oxpens development will feature 234 new apartments, 258 student rooms, approximately 500,000 square feet of labs or office space, and a 250-bed hotel built on land near the Student Castle Flats in Osney Lane. The scheme off Oxpens Road will turn an underused brownfield site into an extension of the city centre, a new residential, commercial and leisure quarter for Oxford, featuring new walking and cycling routes. The proposal would provide significant public realm improvements, which will include a new amphitheatre, events lawn and play area. Planning officers have recommended it for permission ahead of the meeting on Tuesday. Speaking ahead of this meeting, Susanna Pressel, City Councillor for Osney and St Thomas's Ward, said, "Perhaps best of all, there will be a new public park open to the river and more trees than there are now, including trees all along Oxpens Road. The scheme will link to the west end of the city via the contentious Oxpens River Bridge. The other developments in the west end include the new labs in Hythebridge Street, Botley Road and Railway Station Bridgeworks. Oxford Civic Society supports the scheme. A spokesperson for the group said, "The Oxpens site has been idle for far too long, some half a century. Oxford Civic Society has vigorously encouraged and supported West End development initiatives for many years. This application is very welcome." Oxford Preservation Trust was disappointed the scheme didn't include more flats. The Trust added, "OPT feels unable to support this development in its current form, and consider more thought needs to be given to the level of housing provision, heights, views and massing, and more information provided regarding the connectivity which is essential to ensure that this site becomes fully integrated into the city and towards the west. The site comprises Oxpens Road car park, car parking for Royal Mail, public toilets, the Formula One Auto Centre garage, and a former nightclub building that is occupied by Oxford Direct Services."
Hundreds of staff at Oxford University Hospitals Trust were off sick during Christmas week, new figures show. A health and social care think tank said the high number of NHS staff absent on Christmas week across England is concerning, and soaring flu cases mean absences may not fall in coming weeks, with the NHS under increasing pressure. NHS England figures show an average of 744 staff members at the Oxford University Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust were off ill each day between December 23rd and 29th. However, this was down from 759 in the same period the year before. Further NHS digital data shows 13,177 full-time equivalent staff were working at the Trust in August, the latest month for which data is available. It suggests around 6% of the workforce were absent during Christmas week. Across the country, an average of 50,000 NHS staff per day were absent from work. It was up from almost 47,000 the previous year, but down from around 60,000 in 2022, and nearly 72,000 in 2021, which were affected by the COVID pandemic. These absences were due to sickness or self-isolation with COVID. Dr. Pilly Palmer, Senior Fellow at the Nuffield Trust, said the number of NHS staff absent from work on Christmas week is concerning. He added, "Staff absences can disrupt care for patients, increase costs and put additional pressures on those staff at work. Previous research has also established that staff who have been off sick are more likely to leave the NHS in the future." Dr. Palmer also warned soaring flu cases mean the number of absences is not guaranteed to fall in the next few weeks. Across all NHS trusts that submitted the data in the South East, an average of 5,256 staff members were absent each day during the Christmas week. Meanwhile, separate NHS digital figures show anxiety, stress, depression and other psychiatric illnesses was the most reported reason for sickness in July, accounting for over 606,800 full-time equivalent days lost and 26% of all sickness absences. At Oxford University Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, 3,270 FTE days were lost due to ill mental health in July, responsible for 18% of all absence. This comes as several NHS trusts declared critical incidents because of sustained pressure in A&E departments, with people being treated in corridors and a patient at one hospital forced to wait 50 hours to be admitted to a ward. Some hospitals have restricted visitor numbers, while others are encouraging people to wear surgical masks to limit the spread of viruses.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help. That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about OxTalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. That's 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.